Hey, that's Coach Mike here. That's CoachMike.com. Premium guys, I love you to death. This requires very little introduction, right? We've had him on a number of times. Every time just kills it. He's in his 31st season at Roanoke, 341 career wins, 70% win percentage, best in the history of ODAC, 19 consecutive winning seasons, and a great, great friend to our site. This is more of a general coaching dialogue, but man, there's a great, great drill in here. Again, I'm so humbled by your support of my site. This is Lax Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com.
Hey, Lax Coach Mike here, LaxCoachMike.com. Coach, my radio voice has really improved over the years, hasn't it?
Fantastic.
Yeah. Hey, man, absolutely thrilled. Been a long time coming. Got Coach Pilot back with us for another time. Coach, welcome back. Hard to believe we've been doing this 10 years.
Yeah, it's great to be back. Happy to be here, Mike.
I was listening to the podcast we had done in the past. I'm looking at the dates, like 2009, 2012. I'm going, holy mackerel, has it been that long?
Yeah. I was thinking about it the other day, how long ago I was on the show. That's longer than I thought. I thought it was only like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I don't know when the last one was. I think this is our fourth, but...
Oh, yeah, okay, all right, yep. All right.
Yeah,
maybe
all good.
We did it 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. I'm too old, no. Man. I don't know how you, being like my age, you keep track of all this stuff. I'm terrible.
I have trouble. I write a lot of notes and stuff.
Yeah, me too, man. Actually, if you saw my desk right now, you would laugh like crazy, but all good. Hey, Coach, welcome back, and again, thanks so much for coming back, and then... Also got to recognize, man, you're just a rock, you know? I mean, you just have continued success year in and year out. I follow you. Listen, I shouldn't say this on the air, but I still keep track of Jared Arnston all the time.
Oh, yeah, nice. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's still running kayaks over waterfalls and stuff like that, so.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, we'll read about him one day.
Yeah, hopefully it's for a good thing.
Hey, for the listeners, we've seen all kinds of variations and trends over the years, and you know, one of the things that remains really, really interesting to me is, Coach has a philosophy, and he has stayed with the framework with the philosophy, although he has, done some moderation. I just want to review real quick. I mean, number one, we got chaos, is the theme at Roanoke, and clearly, they continue to, be a transition or a up and down team. And the second one is the unique practice philosophy of actually breaking the practice into, 4 hours. Or excuse me, 4 hours, right? 4 quarters.
Oh, yeah. Well,
of,
that's the old days. We used to go 4 hours. Yeah, old
yeah
days.
I'm trying to read notes here and everything else, man. 4 quarters, each with its own theme, almost like 4 mini games inside of a practice, oftentimes with conditioning at the end of each of the sessions, a water break. But the thing that I share with other coaches, and a lot of college coaches, incidentally, you know, I talk to them about your halftime. So, give me 20 seconds on chaos, and then give me 20 seconds on the breakdown on the 4 quarters, especially the theme at halftime. I just love it.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. Yeah, it's been great. You know, it's funny. I've been around a long time. It's my 31st year at Roanoke, and I'm really happy to be there, and I've been there that long and had so much fun with the guys and stuff. I started the practice plan 4 quarters the day I took over. As head coach in 1989, I wanted to implement that. And I've had a lot of my guys go on to coaching, you know, and some of my assistant coaches have moved on, and my former players have moved on, and a lot of those guys use similar stuff. Peter Lawrence was up at Hartford, and he did the 4 quarters, and Matt Madelon's played for me. He's a head coach at Princeton, and I don't know if he does 4 quarters, but I think he does a halftime difference thing that we do. And Michael Hoffmeister's my assistant. He's a head coach at Scranton, and I know he does the difference. I think he does the 4 quarters, and Carl Haas is up at Alvernia, same thing. So I'm really that's awesome for me to have those guys taking that. And it's also kind of funny because sometimes I met a kid who played at at Hartford a few years ago, and I don't know how we talked about it, but he said, yeah, my coach does practice in four quarters. That's pretty cool. And I'm like, well, your coach played for me, so. I didn't invent a lot of things, but I did invent a couple things. That's one of them. So it's great to be imitated, and it's definitely flattering. And, you know, we just have done the four-quarter practice. I don't know where I came up with it. I don't know. I just kind of thought that, I hated guys asking for water and stuff like that, so I let the team know we're going to do four quarters, and at the end of every quarter, it's a water break, so you know when you're getting water, so we don't have to waste time, and guys aren't asking to get water and stuff like that. So, and it also has a progression. You know, the first quarter is generally stretching and warm-up drills, some kind of stick drills, and then a water break. Then the second quarter is individual teaching, you know, broke down by position, then a water break, and then we have the halftime, and at the halftime, I've made up a lot of these, what we call them differences, but I know that I borrowed this idea way back in probably 1986 or 87 at the coaches' convention. I can't remember which coach it was. It might have been Coach Zimmerman, had the edge, they called it, and it would be just a little tidbit they go over every day, and I thought that was a great thing. So we call it the difference. And at halftime, we talk about a difference, and we have tons and tons of differences. Some of them are, you know, theme-based, rule-based. Maybe you go over the new rules on the counting, the shot clock, and the dive. Maybe you go over that one day. And sometimes you just go over the proper way to do a two-on-one ground ball. And sometimes it's as simple as, you know, good sportsmanship. That, you know, we talk to everybody. We want to be good sportsmanship. And sometimes as simple as, you know, just walking out to the field and how you want to be confident and stuff like that. And we have a lot of different names for them. And then we go third quarter, you know, more team teaching, you know, 4-on-3s, 3-on-2s, stuff like that. And then fourth quarter, typically full field stuff, scouting report stuff, maybe man up, man down, and all those kind of things. And then sometimes we'll do a little conditioning at the end of each quarter just so we don't do it all at the end. Maybe at the end of the first quarter we do a sprint, second quarter a couple sprints, stuff like that. And that's been great for us, and we've loved it. And then the chaos model I came up with in 1992, J.B. Clark, who's the head coach at Limestone, has great success there, was my assistant in 92. And I came up with the acronym of CHAOS, and he and I implemented it. And it stands for constantly harass and create opportunities to score. And it's chaos because it's really fast moving and kind of crazy pace. And it's funny now because, you know, what's old is new again. So we've been doing that since 92, and everybody's talking about playing fast and this and that. So our practices have not changed. You know, we tweak things here and there, but they haven't changed one bit with these new rules and the shot clock and all that. In fact, it's very easy for us. I laughed with my AD about a year ago or something about putting up the shot clocks. You know, they cost $2,000 and stuff, and I think we turned them on three times the whole of last season. The timer on thing was only used three times.
Yeah.
So now at least they get to use it, but the chaos system has been really fun. We have a lot of different drills we like to do with that, and just an overall philosophy.
Well, and it manifests itself, right? I mean, still shooting 43 shots a game. I mean, well, I'm looking at last year's stats, obviously, but
yeah.
Yeah, you could kind of set that. Do you actually set a goal of 40 shots a game, coach, or?
Well, we used to, in the old days, we had a goal of 60 shots a game. We wanted to get 60 okay. every game, which is quite a bit. And
you think?
When I had some, yeah, that was a lot. It was 15 a quarter, you know, and 1 a minute, really, 60-minute game, but. And we used to accomplish that a lot, and the chaos used to be even more, more crazy, more. In fact, I remember, I think the first game we ever opened it up was 92, and we played a team that not a great opponent, a solid team, and I think we had like 102 shots the first game we ever used it. Because a lot of times when we put things in, we want to work on it so much, that's all we do, and that's all we did. We had no, you know, when we first started, we had no slowdown. There was no, hey, let's hold the ball, settle it down. We wanted to go, 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 and the guys did. And that would, you know, it's kind of weird. That was our philosophy, and we wanted to play that way to beat the better teams, and it worked a lot of times. But It also caused some bad feelings because you're scoring more goals. You know, some of these coaches have this rule, can't score more than 20 goals, stuff like that. Well, you can't really have that rule if you want to take 60 shots. It's probably not going to work. So sometimes feelings could get hurt a little bit. And so we had to dial it back a little bit once we learned about it. But that's part of the learning curve, too.
No, man, it's crazy.
Yeah.
I just had a thought pop into my head out of the clear blue, and then I want to come back to the subject matter. Coach, I'm seeing these great D3 programs, and I don't want to mention any names because I don't mean it as a positive or a negative. But, man, the roster sizes at D3, I think, have really grown, haven't they? How many are you carrying on the varsity roster?
Yeah, they have grown quite a bit. I've kind of bucked that trend.
Okay.
I've never carried over 50, and I never will.
Okay.
I think for me personally, I have one full-time assistant and one part-time. It's just too many guys to kind of teach and keep happy. And so this year we only have 41, I believe. So we're one of the smaller. Most are 50 plus, as you know.
Yeah, I mean, for the listeners, if you go check out some of these rosters, not so much Salisbury, but man, I know our good friend Steve Kadalko is carrying 60 or 70, or he was the last game I saw, which was like a year ago or 2 years ago. It's just crazy, man. I don't know how you keep all those guys busy. And as I was listening to our previous podcast, and listeners got to go back and listen to that. Last time we did exclusively goalies, and there's a ton of stuff in there. But you've always been really empathetic to the guys. Probably the only coach I have had that has talked about it in detail in 160 hours in our library now, about being very empathetic to the guys that are coming out there and working hard every day and not getting a ton of playing time in games.
Yeah, something, you know, I think these younger coaches need to think about that. You know, it's very interesting to me. You know, we have all these coaches conventions, and guys do a great job with the talking about the X's and O's and stuff like that, but in my opinion, a lot of these younger coaches need to think about the players that are playing for them. And you get a younger coach who is an All-American and a great player and all that stuff, and they can be great coaches, but they don't know what it's like to sit on the bench. You know, they don't know what it's like to not play and practice every day, so they don't really think about that. I think we as coaches should definitely consider that. Everybody's a valuable member, and it's hard. Same with me, you know, we got to get this offense in, and my top six guys, I really got to see them play, and you guys that don't play much, just go over there. But, you know, at some point we have to give them the instruction so they can improve, and we also have to give them the respect for coming out every day. And I think it has to be a conscious effort. For me, I know it is. I have to. In fact, I just yesterday in practice made a conscious effort. There was a boy on the team who's a younger guy, and he's not one of the better players. And I made an effort to myself to praise him for doing something right, because I don't think he hasn't been getting enough praise, because he's really swimming, you know, doesn't know the concepts and kind of not as physically strong as some of the other guys. So he's at the bottom of the chart. But, you know, I just said, hey, good job out there. And he thanked me right away, where, you know, some guys just keep playing. So I felt good about that. And I think it's got to be conscious.
Yeah. One of the things, that I did as a high school coach, and then I did a really good job when I was at Auburn, when I had like a 45-man roster. If you work at it, you know, the kids that are, you know, the outside of the third line middies or something, or the eighth or ninth pole or something like that, what I always try to do, I don't think the playing time is important to them in terms of the volume of the playing time. Well, let me say that it's important to them, right? But the fact that they got in a game is huge. So
yeah.
At the high school level, you know, we told our teams at the beginning of the year, we're going to try, and with goalies, obviously, it doesn't always work out. But, and yeah, I mean, goalies are an exception. But other than that, we try and get every player at least a minute of playing time. And the way I would do that at the high school level was to tell the team, you know, you got to understand, man, if player number 28 is dramatically improved, then player number 7 is going to get a lot better in practice when he's playing against player number 28.
Oh, and, absolutely.
You know, so we need to bring up the culture, the overall bar, you know, of the skills and the attitude and the hustle and everything else. And I would tell my starters, you know, this is all about, you know, getting practices at a higher level so that the, you know, the overall unit is much better. So we used to substitute in the first half,
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, let's say maybe we score a goal at the 3-minute mark or the 4-minute mark, and the ball was going down the other end. I would pull out one of the starting defensemen and put in defenseman like number 8.
Yeah.
And even if the ball wasn't at that end of the field, and now did they want more playing time? Absolutely they wanted more playing time. But, man, the difference in how engaged they were in practice by the fact that they even played 2 minutes in a game, even if the ball wasn't at their end of the field, was mind-blowing. You know, and all of a sudden they're paying attention. You know, they know at some point they're going to get in the game. And
yeah,
I carried that philosophy on, you know, to with a 40-45-man roster, and it was far more difficult. And it was a hard sell with a new team to get the existing players to understand what the methodology was. But we used to try and do those subs in the first half, so all of a sudden it gets to be the third or the fourth quarter. You're not going, oh, man, I really got to get Billy in the game. Billy's done a great job in practice the last 2 weeks. I got to reward him, give him some positive reinforcement. You know, I would try and get all that out of the way in the first and second quarter, at least to the point where I had everybody in the game but maybe 3 guys or something like that.
Yeah. No, it's hard to do, and it's a conscious effort, and I try it. It depends on the situation. And, you know, that's the only reason that I miss the horn. You know, in the old days, you'd have the horn. Well, you had it all over the place, but the horn on the sidelines. And, you know, I know Coach Berkman did this a lot, and I tried to do it as well. You know, you have the riding attack. You got 3 guys that can't beat anybody to the goal, but they hustle and they're fast. And we would have that horn, and there are three new guys that tried on the field. And, you know, the whole sideline gets pumped up. And but you can't do that now, so it's a little more difficult. But yeah, I like what you're saying, and we try to do similar stuff. My 2009 team, who was really strong, we were ranked number 1 in the country for like 6 weeks or something like that. We were undefeated, and it was funny that year we had pretty good depth on attack. I had 5 really good attackmen, and I told the attack, I said, we're going to use 2 lines of attack, and they looked at me like I was crazy. I mean, one guy was an All-American, and I said, your points are going to go down, but you're going to have a better season. And sure enough, 5 minutes into the game, I would sub all 3 guys out, and the new guys would come in, and, you know, the guys on the side are chomping at the bit, and we used it in a lot of ways. It caused a lot of team camaraderie because they're cheering for more guys, and also we put a big emphasis on riding, you know, that year, and I said, if you 3 guys aren't riding hard, you're all coming out. I said, 1 guy's not riding hard, all 3 come out. So it gives you a lot of power.
Oh, I love
power.
That peer pressure, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of power to do things the right way, and now, we haven't had that many great attackmen, so I haven't been able to do that wholesale like that, but I think that gives a lot to the team for sure.
No, I couldn't agree more. Hey, Coach, I want to talk a little bit more about transition stuff today. We've kind of glossed over that. I think in the first podcast there was a 2v1 to a 4v3 behind the cage, if I remember right?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh, yeah. Yep. We do a bunch of drills. One thing I was thinking, you know, when we talked about transition and how now it's, like I said, it makes me laugh how it's such a big thing now. And you know, what's old is new again for Roanoke, at least since '92. We've been pushing the ball up the field. And you know, I think about it, right? People talk about playing fast and all this stuff, and it makes my hair stand on end a little bit. You know, you want to see playing fast. Now, I don't want to sound like an old timer, like, you know, back in my day things were great. Throw on a 1983 Syracuse film or any Division I film from even Division III from that era, and there was no talk about playing fast back then. You just played. So people are talking about playing fast. Why don't you let your kids just play? And if they make mistakes, okay, fine, but you teach them where the looks are and all this stuff. And that's kind of what we've done. And we teach guys, first of all, one of the overriding philosophies is only one guy has the ball. So what the heck are you other 9 people doing? It's more important to us what the other 9 are doing than what the one guy is doing. The one guy is running for his life. He's trying to get away from somebody. He's looking up. He's clearing the ball, whatever he's doing. But what are you other 9 guys doing? And, you know, I think the best coaches, you know, look at the other guys. You know, that's why I was telling my wife, I'm like, hey, when the game's going on, watch this guy when he doesn't have the ball. Watch how good he is and stuff like that. Because the fans all watch the guy with the ball, you know, the parents
right.
just watch the ball. So we do a lot of time, a lot of effort on running drills, you know, 4-on-3, 5-on-4, you know, a scramble drill, you roll the ball out, whatever. but we'll stop it and say, hey, look over here. You know, where could he have gone? You know, and, oh, yeah, he should have stepped up a little, or maybe he shouldn't have cut. And so we do a lot of teaching on that, that sometimes, you know, not cutting is the best cut you can make, things like that. And a lot of our drills are around that. And one drill, I don't think I shared it last time, that I made up years ago, and a lot of my guys have taken it where they've gone. I love this drill, early season, to work on your guys' decision-making and transition. So, you know, you've put in your 4-on-3 fast break, however you want to run that, and so the guys know to get in an L or whatever, and the D gets in a triangle. But we do a full field drill going both ways. The attack and D have to stay below the restraining lines, below the respective restraining lines. The middies can go from restraining line to restraining line, so they're in the middle of the field. And then you do a scramble drill. So I stand, you know, at the box. There's six middies in front of me. There's 3D, 3 attack at one end, 3D, 3 attack at the other end. Goalies are in the net. I roll the ball in the middle of the field somewhere. The middies pick it up, and they're going to the goal. So hopefully there's a guy ahead of them that we can pass it to. Sometimes they have to just run it. And then the rule is once the middie with the ball, the first middie that enters the box, all chasing middies stop. So you're going to have a 4-on-3 every time. So let's say the guy comes in, it's a 4-on-3. The other five middies, right, two on offense, three that were on defense, are just standing there waiting. Let's say they do a fast break, he shoots at the goalie, saves it, and boom, we're going the other way. So now, because only one middie was in that box, you should have numbers going up the field. You should have a 3-on-2 in the middle of the field. So the goalie has to find that guy, or the defenseman finds him, whoever gets the ball. And then they're pushing it the other way. And you just play it. And then what I'll do is I'll sub after maybe two runs. It's also a good conditioner, a realistic conditioner. Maybe the middies will get two runs, maybe three. And then it's okay, all middies sub. You know, new six guys, try it out. Maybe you put your long stick out there. We let him do it.
How many reps do you give the middies, Coach? How long are they out there?
You kind of look at what kind of runs they have and how much conditioning you want. And,
right.
You know, try to make them go one offense, one defense if you can.
Okay.
And then just keep it rolling. And then you can build on that. And we do that always preseason. You know, we just did it like 3 days ago, I think, at practice. We try to do it a few days in a row to get better at it. And for the high school guys out there, we used to do this also is we would take, let's say you have your top middies, your first midline, the guys you want to create transition. You put three of them out there, but you only put two middies on the other team. So now you roll it. You can make it a ground ball fight, or you can just roll it to the team with three. So now they definitely have an extra man in that middle of the field. So now you're teaching those guys what I just talked about, finding your space without the ball, where should you cut, how can you help your teammate. And the two guys are supposed to be aggressive, you know, jump the ball, make them throw it upfield, slide upfield, do some of the things you might not want to do in a riding situation. So that's a good kind of build up. If you want to teach your middies, if you're having trouble decision-making. And then if you get good at that one, you can just add, instead of having three middies versus three
Yeah, let me interrupt you 1 second, Coach.
Oh, go ahead.
Let's say the guy takes a shot and the goalie makes a save. Do you add one to the team with two if you're going back the other way, or you just count on the fact that middie is going to get in the box and then it's still going to be a 4v3 in the box at the far side?
Right, exactly. Good question. And that you can – whatever you want to work on, you know, if you're only working on your top players going 3-on-2, you can stop the drill right there. You can add another middie and make it 3-on-3 the other way if you want to keep it going. Or if you want to work on riding, aggressive riding, you can tell the poor team with only two guys to try to clear the ball and let the other guys ride them, you know, double team. So you can work on whatever you want. You can do that. And then, of course, you can build it up, too. You can build up the first drill I said, you know, the first middie to enter the box, it becomes a 4-on-3. Well, you can then put the rule in, the first two middies can enter the box, and the first middie chasing can also enter, and it becomes a 5-on-4.
I'm writing. Keep going.
And we've never gone to the 6-on-5. I suppose you could do that. But
it'd get real crowded in there,
yeah. Yeah, we've never done that, but I guess you could. But we usually do the 4-on-3, the first middie, it's a 4-on-3. And then the other thing that we do quite a bit, let's say your top defense is on your end to the left, and your younger second defense is on the right, and your top attack is on the left, so you have your top three attack against your top three defenders. You have your six middies in the middle of the field waiting for you to roll the ball. So now I roll the ball into the defensive box. So the middies can't go in there, but you have three defenders, you have your goalie, and you have three attack. So the attack is trying to get the ball back, and the D is trying to clear it. So the D is working on clearing it with the 4-on-3. The middies are trying to get opened, and you're pushing the ball up the field. It's a quick drill. You're not taking your time. And we tell our attack, jump the ball. You know, if the goalie starts walking the ball up and nobody's covering him, I'm going crazy. Somebody jump him, because we want to make them move the ball. And then you just play it out from there. And you'll get turnovers. You know, you'll get if the attack rides and gets it back, nearest middie can jump in. And now you're working on spacing because you have 4 against 3. So those guys need to spread out, move the ball. The D has to recognize, crash the hole, set up their triangle. So for us, for me, I believe that's one of the best drills we use for transition.
I love it. So if the attack gets it, they're going to the cage. Can one middie enter the box if an attacker gets the ground ball when you roll it down?
Exactly. Yep. If the attack gets it, one middie's live. Usually the lowest guy, usually it's the senior who wants to play offense or something like that, but one guy goes in. And then we just play it out. And, you know, a lot of times the attack will get it and the D checks them right away, and then we're trying to clear it again. And if it bogs down, it's a scramble drill. So I just blow the whistle and I roll a new ball. Or if I see maybe I want to see a 4-on-3 the other way, and I see one middie is kind of by himself, I'll blow the whistle, throw it to him, and he's off and running.
Awesome, man. You got a name for that, Joe?
No, it's funny when you asked that. I was just thinking, do I have a name for it? No, not really. We just call it scramble, but we tell the parameters that the attack and D stay in the box. And then we open it up to all-out scramble. That's what we just did. I think it was not yesterday. On Sunday we practiced. It was the first time we did scramble. We did with the parameters of staying in the box, and then the other day it's, okay, now guys are doing scramble, and everybody can go everywhere. And then we just roll the ball and go. So it's a great build-up for scramble, because we like to teach kind of what we're looking for and, you know, trying to get the ball to the middle of the field and all that stuff.
Yeah, I had a I think it was Purdy from Adelphi had a 10-man full field scramble. And sometimes, if I remember right, and I'm old, so I don't always remember right, he would go on the field, and I don't know how he did it. I ended up buying online. You remember those canvas bags that the younger listeners have no idea, so just talk amongst yourselves. So do you remember the old days when the newspaper boy would come and he had that canvas satchel?
Oh, the satchel thing, yeah, that they threw the papers out of, huh?
That they threw the papers out of. So I bought one of those online, just canvas, no writing, no embroidery, no nothing. Just like, it was like $14 or something. And he would go out there, and some days it would be 15 balls. And to end practice, it was just when the 15 balls were gone, the scramble was over, okay?
Oh, I like it. Yeah, I like it.
And just, you could blow I mean, a guy would be bolting down on a fast break, and I do it with two quick blasts on the whistle, bang, bang, on the whistle, and then I might roll the ball to the other end of the field.
What
we did was we substituted, attack had to play midfield a little bit, middies had to play attack, kind of left the poles in place. But in that drill, the attack wasn't getting any conditioning, you know. And
right,
rather
exactly.
than sit there all smug and stuck up the way attackmen can often choose to be, man, they hated it when we would run them at middie, you know.
Exactly.
You know, the players, like the guy would be running by me gas going, how many balls are in the satchel? How many balls are left, you know? And then we kind of modified that to where we would run it like a very similar to a 10v10 game to one, where we would, if you got a bigger roster, I mean, for high school teams, putting together 20 guys on the field is a challenge.
Yeah.
You know? Especially if you're going to do something, you know, anyway. Yeah, we would do like games to one, only there would be 5 balls in the satchel. And then we would, you know, substitute attackmen and poles and stuff like that every 5 balls and do a total of 15 altogether. So the ones and the twos got two runs to five sprinting up and down the field. And well, kind of depending on how much time was in practice or, you know, what you wanted to accomplish and all those kind of things too. But,
yeah, that's
cool. And I
loved
that. Like I said, the other coaches, if we had players that they were going to sub in, you know, they would go to the sidelines and sub, and I would just be the bad guy. I'm telling you, guys would be coming around to X. We'd have a 2v1 on the backside pipe, two quick blows on the whistle, and I'd roll the ball out at midfield.
And, yeah, and it's a good conditioner for sure. We do the same thing and use it as conditioning, and it's tiring. And the first drill I told you that I love so much with the attacking D, not allowed to go above the restraining line. I mean, that's just a beating on the poor middies. But like you said, the attack's just running 4-on-3. It's pretty darn easy for those guys.
Yeah. Well, and being a former pole, you know, I've got an inherent deep-down subliminal hard-on for all attackmen.
So, yeah, they got it too easy. Mostly.
I suppose that's where the old bias came out, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose that's where
right.
The old bias came out. So, Coach, you think the new shot were, I'm in awe, you know, of Coach because when I check the metrics on my site when we do new podcasts, I always see that Coach has checked them out. Almost every time, you know, when we publish drills or at the end of the year we do the top 10, you know, I look at who's clicked on the site and stuff like that just for giggles, you know. And as great as your history has been and as great an influence you've had on players and coaches, you know, I look at it and I smile and it's an inspiration to me because I'm going, man, here's a guy that has done it all and is still out there looking for new ideas, you know. And I mean
oh,
that
yeah.
as a compliment to you, not a patronization to me by any stretch, you know. But
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, I think you always want to look for new ideas. And like I said, a lot of the new ideas are not really that new, but you get a little wrinkle here and there. So I love listening to there's just the content. I mean, your site has so much good stuff, and there's other sites out there, too. It's amazing to me, and the young coach definitely needs to take advantage of that, and I definitely want to take advantage of it myself. And there's always great ideas. I mean, some of these coaches.
Well, and I'm not in it, you know, for the money. I mean, we don't even have a sponsor on our site now. We don't sell any advertising. We don't do anything. It's just a very narrow niche, you know, exclusively for coaches. But, you know, there's good stuff out there. I mean, I think Jamie Monroe is putting some great stuff out there.
Yeah.
And now you've got all kinds of, you know, with the MLL players and now the PLL guys and all that, you know, a lot of them are doing their own videos on coaching stuff too, even as minute as, you know, rocker step to a rollback or stuff like that. You know, if it's an all world attackman just doing a little YouTube video. And it's interesting.
Yeah,
I mean,
you can pick up.
When I do my coaches clinics, you know, across the country, and none of it is my stuff, you know, people want to know. You know, what's a Princeton practice look like? What's a Syracuse practice look like? What's a Salisbury practice look like? What's a Roanoke practice look like? You know, and they're going, you're the only guy that can answer that. And I'm going, wow, that's pretty cool. You know, I mean, who knew?
yeah.
But at the end of the day, I come off negatively in some of those clinics because I hammer those guys on being hypocrites. You know, they want their kids to be on the wall. Strength and conditioning is now permeated down into the high school level as a major priority. And you know what? I mean, you know the emphasis that guys like Berkman and stuff put on that. I mean, your friend and somebody you guys have great games with every year. But what are the coaches doing to get better, man?
Yeah.
You know, it's so hypocritical to expect your players to spend buku hours, you know, working on individual skill improvement or whatever it turns out to be. And, you know, the coach is sitting on his tail until the next season. Then he's taking out the same, you know, 1.5 buckets of greaser balls for 35 guys on the field. You're going like, what are you doing, man? You know, what are you doing?
Well, for me, you know, that's where my assistant coaches really come in. You know, Drew Bowers is my assistant, played for me, and is at Kenyon, has done a great job. And Joe Pilley is my new assistant coach. He was assistant at Alvernia. And I look to those guys, we'll talk about them. Like, hey, I'm thinking we need to work on transition, and what do you think about, you know, this drill? And I say, you got any tweaks, anything different? And then we just kind of talk about it. So what those young guys can bring to the table for guys like me is just invaluable. But again, I guess, and I know the best coaches do this, you know, us old guys, we got to listen. You know, I got I can't say, oh, no, I've done it this way. I got to keep doing it this way. And, I mean, there's some things like that, like, you know, rules and discipline and keeping guys on the same page. We found a success model that works. But there's other things that, hey, I want to, you know, what do you got, man up? What's new? Or man down, anything different? And so I love hearing that stuff. I absolutely love it.
Well, and it's funny, man, after doing 160 hours of podcasts, what we often hear is, Coach Mike is, we brought him in as a new assistant coach this year. We're real thrilled. He brought us this drill or this variation of that drill.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of the ideas come from, you know, the younger coaches that are, you know, start out as grad assistants and then maybe they go to a program with a slightly higher pedigree, you know, and they get on as an assistant or they do this, or people want people that have coached for you, you know, I mean.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You have a head count on how many guys that are coaches for you?
No, there's a whole bunch out there. I don't know. Pat Marks, assistant at Princeton. Justin Tuma is assistant at High Point, played for me. And, of course, my son Will is an assistant at Wesleyan University in, you know, the national champs up there. I got to see him coach in the national championship. That was exciting. And so, no, there's tons of guys. And Trey Keeley is the head coach at Baldwin Wallace, and Reed Mayberry's head coach. He was at Marion. He moved somewhere. Aurora, I think he's at. So yeah, there's a whole bunch.
Yeah, coach, I got 50.
Wow, that's great.
Now, I mean, high school's a lot different, you know, because schools in Atlanta are dying for coaches. You know, if you can breathe and you've got 2 years experience, they don't care if you played for Coach Mike or King Tut. You know, you're in. You're in.
That's awesome.
We still have such a deficit, you know, in coaching in these outlying areas, you know, and we were talking off the air about, my Copperhead company and trying to develop across in Macon and Carrollton and, man, finding boys and girls coaches in some of these remote areas is a challenge.
Yeah, that and officials, you know, that's the two areas.
Oh, that and officials. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's coaching thing, you know, both of those are labors of love, you know, and we don't get a lot of money from coaching, but it's, to me, it's still very rewarding to see guys develop and have fun and you know, get really friendships that last a lifetime, you know, going out on the field sweating and getting beat up by each other and by the coaches. It just brings guys together, and the feeling of accomplishment when you do something right. And I mean, sports gives it like nothing else, as you know.
So have you ever been across the box from somebody that played for you?
Yeah, there's been a couple times. Let's see, Trey Keeley.
Yeah, me too.
Ohio Wesleyan. Yep, and Will, we played Wesleyan last year. They beat us up pretty good, so playing against my son, that was real interesting. And who else? Justin Tuma. Well, he was at Randolph-Macon before, right, so went against him. And Matt Madeline was at Hampton-Sydney as an assistant. So, yeah, there's a whole bunch. Yeah, a whole bunch.
You know, it's funny, I get people say, man, you really think you need to win this game? I'm going, how can I lose? I mean, really, how can I lose? You know?
Yeah. You know,
if you've got a kid that you coach that's across the box from you and his kids play great that day, how can you not think that's awesome that, you know, people going, well, he learned so much from you. I'm going, the only thing he learned from me was to love lacrosse.
Yeah.
You know, and if we can teach him to love lacrosse first, picking up ground balls metaphorically is very, very easy. You know?
Yeah, it's all a process, and it's, you know, the older I get, you know, longer you're in this thing, it's the wins and losses. Everybody wants to win, but, you know, what are you teaching these guys to help them be good husbands, workers, and good citizens, and, you know, just doing things together as a team and moving on from there. And that's what I tell my guys all the time. One thing you're going to learn is we want to win every game. We think we should win every game. We try to win every game. But one thing for sure is we're going to be prepared every game. So you're ready. There's a game plan. You know, we've worked on our skills, and then we let the chips kind of fall where they may.
Well, we got to get back on track here, man. I'm in this kumbaya dialogue with you now. yeah, the hardcore guys are going, oh, Mikey, get off the kumbaya crap, okay? I think it's let's get back on track here. Last year, man up percentage, 37.5. I've talked to you before about the man up and the man down philosophies. Are you still kind of running that hybrid 1-3-2 with the top middies pressed down 10 yards above the GLE on your man up? And what is the reason for this? I want to say, you're right, the national average is like 27-28% on the man up NCAA. And you play a brutal schedule, man. I mean, that's one thing about Roanoke. People love to play against you because of the esteem of your program and your friendships with other great head coaches and scheduling with those guys. But, man, I mean, almost 38% on man up, that's pretty amazing, Coach.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And, you know, attribute a lot to the players and having good guys in good spots. Last year was an amazing year for us. And, you know, a lot of people might not know or whatever, but we had easily the most injuries, bad injuries I've ever had in my 31 years as head coach. And, you know, if I was to ask you, like, okay, how many season-ending injuries, what would you think would be a rough year? You know, Glax, Coach Mike, how many guys you lose for the season? What would you think would be a high number?
Two starters, three starters?
Three, yeah. We had 10.
Oh, my word.
10 guys. Now, they weren't all starters, but all
right.
Contributors and that. But the most I ever had before that, I think, was 2. So we had, you know, our man up was constantly changing. We had our attack. By the end of the year, I had one of my middies was starting on attack because the young guys weren't ready, and I had lost 2 attackmen. And the crazy thing, right, you say, yeah, the kids nowadays are getting soft, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that may or may not be true. That's a debatable topic we could talk about, but 7 of these 10 guys had surgery. So it wasn't even like I could say, you're soft, get out there. They couldn't do it. It ain't happening.
Well, when you were carrying 40, 45 guys or 48 guys, that's a pretty big hit.
Oh, we were down. At the end of the year, we only had 32 able-bodied guys. It was crazy. Now some of our key guys were fine. Our goalie's first team All-American. He didn't get hurt, thank goodness. And Ivy Stucker was first team All-American midfielder. He was, you know, free and clear the whole year. But, you know, we lost a starting defenseman. I lost my top 3 faceoff guys. 1, 2, and 3 gone.
Well, I didn't have the balls to say anything to you, but I saw the faceoff percentage at 42, so I thought something
happened.
That's why.
Yeah. We had a couple pretty good ones. So I was down to number 4, who the kid was a walk-on, did a super job, worked his butt off, couldn't, 2 freshmen were my top 2 face-off guys. But anyway, to answer your question on man up, so I gotta begin with that because we lost, our 2 starting attackmen, a lefty and a righty, one was a broken thumb and the other was a broken wrist, I think. So we had to replace them, but basically our philosophy is the same. We really like we call it a 1-3-2, but people might call it a push down 3-3.
Right.
You know, you have one guy in each of the pipes there and you push down the wings and the top center guy stays kind of high. We really like that set, but it's based on personnel. And, you know, I first saw that set. I'll never forget years ago, Ohio Wesleyan had 2 great attackmen and they were running that set back when Leland was there. And, you know, I think we stole it from them. And it's just so hard to cover because, you know, if you're an X's and O's guy and, you know, you want to put it on a piece of paper and look at it, you put one guy in each pipe, and they have to be covered. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They got to cover those 2 guys. So right away, 2 guys are out of the mix. So now you're basically, however you play defense, you're 4-on-3 with those other 4 guys. That's the bottom line. So you just work those 4-against-3s, and you teach your guys where the looks are. If you have a good crease guy who's a threat, it's pretty darn hard to cover 4-against-3 in that little area.
Where have all the crease guys gone?
Oh, golly.
I mean, at high school and college, you just don't see the crease play like I remember it. Or maybe I'm just old and I have dreams of grandeur about walking 30 miles to school in the snow uphill. But
yeah, the crease
think?
Is a tough
I mean,
spot. Yeah, it's tough. We've been
you just don't
fortunate.
See what you used to see.
Yep. Well, it's not taught as much, you know, but we've been fortunate. We've had some really good ones, and I got a good one this year, too. But he can play perimeter, too, but... we've had some really good guys and, you just practice it. And I think you just got to find some way they can do it because it's, you know, kind of like being a goalie. In my opinion, it's a special mindset to be that crease guy, knowing you're going to catch it and you only have a short amount of time to look and shoot or pass and you're going to get checked. So kind of like a goalie, you know, you might be real quick, but every once in a while you're going to get nailed with a ball, and you got to be okay with that.
So, Coach, are you putting an attackman on the crease on the man up, or is that a middie?
Almost always an attack for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost always. I can't think of when we used a middie in there, but yeah, our man up is.
I was going to say, like every 5 or 6 years, I get an attackman that can play the crease, and we get out of the 23 set, if you will, from up top, you know, because that's where I'm from. But, when you find a guy that, an attackman that can play crease, man, I get go back to my old offensive philosophies, and if you can find one that's 6'3 or 6'4 and left-handed, it's even better.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We like big guys in there for sure. Yeah, we don't like small guys in there. We always put a big, at least 6 feet, for us inside. And again, it's such a weapon, you know, if you can get scouted, and if you don't have a guy that you never throw the ball to, you can lay off a little bit. But if you throw it in there once or twice, again, just like the two guys on the pipes, that guy has got to be covered, so you're taking a guy out of the defense right off the bat, so. No, we love it.
What's the most common look on that? I mean, are you trying to get the guy in the middle up top to have somebody commit to him, and then he's banging to the other top guys if he can't skip low because those guys are locked on?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it depends how the D plays it. Now, they could either, you know, string it, you know, box kind of string
right.
it, or they can rotate. If they rotate, that means they're coming off those low guys on the pipes.
Then
and usually that. Yeah, then you can skip it. Or you shoot from those wings. You know, you want to have your best decision guy, center front, lefty, righty.
You
want to have your strong lefty shooter, left side, strong righty shooter, right side, and a good crease guy inside. And we typically put our lowest scoring guys on the pipes because they typically do not get the ball. They're just being covered.
Interesting.
So that you need four. I think this would be great for a high school guy because you need four good offensive players, and you have two guys that are kind of, in my opinion, decoys.
And how much latitude do you give those two pipe attackmen to go behind and play?
Sometimes
or do you not send them back there much at all?
Not much back, but we'll send them to the goal line extended maybe. And the other thing what we do is if it gets bogged down, we'll spread those guys out goal line extended, and that pulls the D out. So
when you say pull them out, you mean laterally, away from the cage.
Away from the cage, yep.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just get that D to spread out, because they'll get in a pattern of, you know, hey, these two guys on the pipes aren't doing anything, so let me help out on the crease a little more or whatever. But if you pull them wider, and you'll see a lot of Division I teams do. A lot of D1s use that formation. I see it all the time on TV. I love watching it.
Are you doing any rotation out of that or changing its sets out of that, or you get in there and stay in it and just work it?
Depending on personnel, you could do nice rotation out of that. You take, let's say, you know, you got three good righties on the right side, and I'm counting with the pipe attackman, the wing shooter, and the guy in center front, which we call four. You could do a nice little three-man rotation and throw back. Maybe the guy on the wing starts to carry it, and the guy in center front starts to crash crease, and the guy that was on the pipe kind of pulls out, and you just two passes, you might have a shot.
Kind of like a pairs look almost.
Just carry it upfield, throw back to that pipe guy, and then he might look at your center guy who just got down. If not, throw it back up, then attack the left side. And if you have three lefties, you could do it on the left side, too.
Yeah, who has three lefties?
We got them here. I got three lefties here. We got a bunch of lefties this year. So that's a good thing.
Oh, my God, Coach, we're coming up on an hour.
It goes fast.
Well, it always does when I talk to you, man. Some of these I gotta like, it's not that much fun. I'm just kidding. They're all fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right, man. We talked off the air. Coach Pilot coming to Atlanta for a goalie camp this summer in summer of 2019. I've told Coach oftentimes I've got to have, I would guess somewhere, you know, at least 25 over my 40-year tenure that I've sent to. I can't remember a starting goalie that's ever played for me, you know, and now I got this team, this club with like six travel teams, you know what I mean? Even though we all understand the evil of travel. Now I'm a hypocrite. but I need the money, man. My shoes are all torn, you know, it ain't pretty. But at the end of the day, I believe in the goalie camps like there's no tomorrow. So you told me you're coming to Atlanta, and do you have dates on that yet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'll be down, June. What is the date there? Atlanta, June 5th, 6th, and 7th is my camp at Berry College. Can't wait.
Man, and I should have made notes on it. Give it to me again, Coach. There's a website for the goalie camps, right?
Oh, yeah, www.goalieschool.org.
Probably all I need to do is look on my website, and I'm sure it's there 100 places. But
oh, yeah, if you Google goalie camps, lacrosse goalie camps, mine's at the top. So just do that. You'll find me, no problem.
That's right where it belongs, is at the top.
No, it's been great. I'm excited. I've had requests to come to Georgia for many years. And a lot of the Georgia goalies, which I love working with them, have come to my Virginia camp, which is great. I still have that, obviously. But now they don't have to travel as far. So I'm excited to be down at Berry with Coach Gilbert is hosting my camp. And I will be there for sure. And kids are already signing up. It's already, actually, it's the number one goalie school that people are signing up for as of today.
I'm not surprised by that in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, that's great. I knew they wanted me to come down there, so I'm excited. And then I'll be in Texas and California and Massachusetts and Virginia and New York and Indiana, Pennsylvania, Oregon, and Colorado, and a new goalie school in Maryland. So my two new ones are in two great areas, Maryland and Georgia.
Am I wrong, or a couple years ago you were backing off some of the summer travel? Sounds like you're back into it full time now.
Yeah, no, it's big. It's big now. I was growing slowly, but I have some other coaches who have become my directors, and they do some of the camps if I can't attend or if I can only go for a day or two, and they've done a great job with my methodology, so I'm real happy with, and they're all college coaches too, college former goalies. So they've helped me out. Some spots I can't go to, so this year Texas and Georgia camps are at the same time, so I'm going to go to Georgia, and one of my directors will go to Texas.
Okay. Well, man, I can't thank you enough for being a proponent of the site. I can't thank you enough for all the wisdom that you've shared with us and our 8,000 members or whatever it is. I just think you're awesome, and you got a brutal schedule, but I know you're going to pull through, and let's hope we don't run through the injury bug that we ran through before. They seem to go in numbers anyway, don't they? I mean, they happen.
I never had anything like. I figured that was about the worst I could ever deal with injuries, so it can only get better. So the two of the faceoff guys are back this year. It's great to see guys that actually know what they're doing. So that's a big help. But it was interesting.
Yeah, I would think the ortho guy would pay for a trip to Jamaica for you and your wife or something.
Yeah, you got that right.
All right.
But no, it's great. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me. And your site's a great, great spot for information for sure.
Hey, stay on the line with me here, Coach. Special thanks, Coach Pilot. Just the best, man. This is Last Coach Mike, lastcoachmike.com. Remember this, you got an unbelievable, unbelievable opportunity and responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it serious every day. Until next time, everybody, Last Coach Mike.